Super Cecil B. So you're a journalist and a science communicator, and from what I can tell online, you work with SciBri. That's a South African nonprofit that deals in science communication and outreach, that sort of thing. You write science articles for them in Zulu. What else is there to you? What have I missed?
At SciBri, before I started writing science articles in Zulu, I wrote some science columns, a couple of them, some opinion columns, but I also did some science stories while I was still trying to, while I was still new in the science communication business. So sometimes they'd see my articles on my blog and I'd ask to use them on the website, and that's how I started.
Okay, so your background is journalism then?
My background, I studied BSc in chemistry and physics at the University of Zululand. I was a columnist for a local newspaper, and then I worked for them as a journalist, having never set foot in a journalism class. But since they liked my writing, they offered me the job, and well, let's just say I did not mess it up. I was able to call myself a journalist, and everyone believed me, so it's good enough for me.
What paper was that?
It was the Zululand Fever. It's a local newspaper under News 24 in KZN.
So then I suppose that answers a question I was going to ask. Your interest in science and astronomy, you've studied, you said, physics and chemistry. That's all right. Yes. And the astronomy, is that just because it's cool, or where's that come from?
Well, the interest started before I went to university at school. Let's just say the science that I learned in school wasn't perfect or very good. Mm-hmm. I was interested in science based on what I saw on TV. I think it started with Star Trek and a lot of nature documentaries, basically. So that's where the interest in science started. And then it went on to, then I learned about astronomy as well, also on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then I stumbled on some books in the library, which had some stuff in it that sounded ridiculous, but interesting. Stuff on black holes, which at the time, I was, I think, 9 or 10, did not make much sense to me, but it sounded amazing. I think that's when astronomy, out of all the sciences that I learned about at the library, just stuck out to me, because even before I started reading those books, I was very interested. As a kid, where I lived, it was in a very rural area, and the stars were out. It was a very dark sky, and very bright stars. You could see the Milky Way. I didn't know what it was at the time, but it was really pretty. I liked looking at it a lot. And only when I learned about what stars are, how old the universe is, what planets are, and all those things, that it all came together. It clicked, basically, when looking at the beauty of it and learning what it is, everything just clicked. So basically, astronomy started my journey into science and eventually science communication.
Man, that sounds so familiar. That could be my story.
Yeah.
Star Trek, what, Next Generation or original series?
Started with Next Generation. Only learned about the original series much later, and I liked it much better.
Yeah, I'm just gauging your age there, because I remember when the different ones were on TV in this country.
Yeah, and I started with the movies before I saw the series, the Next Generation movies, and then I saw the series as well. And the first one, I can't remember the name of the movie, but it's the one where Enterprise crashes into a planet where the dish separates from the rest of the ship, and then they crash on a planet and they're stranded there. I think that's one of the best action sequences I've ever seen. Now I know that it's a model. I thought they crashed at the time. They crashed a real ship or a real large object, but now you can see the special effects that it's a small model on a sandbox. At the time, it looked amazing.
That was the third one, wasn't it?
I think it was the third one, yeah.
Yeah, whatever that was called. Or Search for Spock, yeah, I think.
Yeah.
Ah, awesome. You have a telescope?
I have a small telescope, yes.
Tell me about it.
It's a 2-inch refractor. I got it a couple of years ago. Before, I was just using my eyes to look at stuff, and an app that you just point at an object and it tells you what it is. But before that, I just saw constellations in books. Then I saw those constellations and pointed them out to my family, which was quite cool. And I could accurately guess what planet was out, what constellation, what stars. So it was pretty cool. Anyway, so I got the telescope a couple of years ago at a Cape Union Mart, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a small 2-inch telescope. I use it to look at the moon and in the first quarter.
Yeah.
And I use it to look at the moon. But usually when I'm at Jupiter as well, and Saturn, if it's in a good position. But basically I've used it in my backyard in the township. And usually some kids have come around to ask what I'm looking at. And when they do see what the moon looks like through the telescope, it's actually amazing. I mean, you never get used to the look on someone's face or the sound, the gasp they make when they see the actual craters, and they can see the Earth shine on the moon as well through the telescope. And it's unbelievable that what they're actually seeing through the telescope is live. It's not a picture of anything. So that gives me an opportunity to explain a lot of things. So it's sort of informal outreach, and it's people of different ages. It's adults, young kids, people who pass by wondering what I'm doing with my telescope in the dark. it's not much. It's not a big telescope or anything, but it's good enough to amaze every time.
I know the small telescopes don't get a lot of love these days, but I don't think I've ever actually bought a telescope. I was very lucky. I had an uncle who was quite a bit wealthier, and he loaned me, in fact, he gave me my first telescope. Was very similar to that, but old. Yeah. You know, this thing must have been made in the 60s or something. It was wooden tripod, and it just wobbled and wobbled.
Yeah.
But it was still incredible, the things that you could see. And even now, I think I've seen more through my binoculars than I do with the actual telescope.
Yeah, they work better than most small telescopes.
Yeah. So, are you a member of any? Are there any local astronomy clubs that you are a member with? Or
no, I wouldn't say I'm familiar with any. I think the one that I do know about, I follow on Twitter. Can't remember the name, but I think it's the Astronomy Association of South Africa. There's that. Also,
I'm not sure. Actually, now think about it. It's maybe a dumb question. I'm not sure there is one in your area.
No. I think there is one in Durban. I think I saw a website once or a couple of times, but I haven't heard much from them. But I'm sure there is a Durban astronomy club. But in 2012, I was part of a university the National Association of Space Science program. It's an honors program that I attended the winter school of in 2012, and we went to Sutherland. It was a two-week winter school, and we went to Sutherland, used and saw the SALT telescope, and also used one of the telescopes there. I think it was a 0.75 meter.
Okay.
Telescope, so that was cool. But in terms of clubs, no, I'm not part of any official clubs. There's that's the unofficial informal one. But some outreach that I did do, because the newspaper I worked for has since closed down. It's the internet and everything. Anyway. So it closed down in 2014, but before then, even before I started working for them, while I was volunteering as a columnist, what I did was every 2 or 3 weeks, as part of my columns, I would write a column about astronomy, any aspect of it. It didn't have to be anything based on current affairs, but sometimes I did connect it with it. Just about the history of the universe, about a certain planet. So basically I was doing science communication, but at the time I didn't know it was science communication, and I didn't know there was a career like science communication or called science communication at the time. I was just writing stuff so that people can enjoy astronomy. So I did that for about 2 or 3 years. But I've been much busier on this science communication I'm doing now that I haven't done much of that outreach for local newspapers as much. And lucky enough, in 2014, I was awarded a Columnist of the Year award for local newspapers. Now, the funny thing about that is that it wasn't a category, a science category or anything. It was just a general category. And the columnists came from a pool of local community newspapers all over South Africa. So it was pretty cool that the judges liked my science columns so much over the political stuff and sports and things that it was a win for science. So
that's actually that was cool. Quite impressive, because, I mean, science journalism doesn't really have much of a footprint in South Africa. I think there's, what, one full-time science journalist that I'm aware of?
Yes, there's Sarah Wilde. I think there's a couple of others who don't call themselves science journalists, but there's just a handful.
Why do you think that is?
One direct cause would be there's really no place to study science journalism in South Africa. You can study as a journalist and become a science journalist if you're interested in science. Or maybe you can be a scientist and study journalism and become a science journalist. But there's a lot of us science communicators, but not so many science journalists.
So it's that overlap then between formal journalism and scientific background.
Yeah. To be a journalist in anything, you have to be familiar or have a lot of knowledge with the subject you're writing about. So to be a science journalist, you have to be either a scientist yourself or be around a lot of science to understand things like policy, the science itself, and a lot of issues around it. So doing science itself is quite demanding, and doing journalism itself is quite demanding. So to do both is quite the challenge. So there's finance journalists and there's all sorts of other journalists, and usually those people are professionals or have a lot of knowledge in those subjects. So it's it's not easy to find someone who is a good scientist or someone who's good at science or understands science to be a journalist as well. So I think one way to solve that is to have official university degree training to be a science journalist. And another cause is that there's just not much interest in it from the perspective of editors yet. It hasn't penetrated the news media in South Africa. Everyone is obsessed with politics in South Africa. Everything is about politics. Every column you'll find is about politics and sport. Lot of sports and politics, and you don't see much outside of that. So, I mean, I wouldn't say there's no interest in South Africa, because every time a science column or a science article is out, there's a lot of interest in it. It's just that editors themselves or newspapers themselves don't see that much interest in it. Yeah.
So then I guess that would leave you as the only person writing in an African language, in South Africa at least, about science.
I think so. I did see an effort by the University of KwaZulu-Natal, who have a lexicon, who are creating a lexicon of Zulu, scientific phrases and concepts and notation into isiZulu. So that's an ongoing effort. What they're also doing there is that they are writing some of their science reports for public viewing in isiZulu. So they are doing that as well. So I'm not the only one, but in terms of putting it in the news, unfortunately, I don't know if anyone else is doing that.
That's a pity. Yeah. That seems like a pretty serious gap to me.
It is a serious gap, not because the trouble with writing science in isiZulu is not that Zulu isn't science-y. It's that it's not science-y enough yet. So what I mean by that is that when you see a lot of science stuff written in isiZulu, it's a direct translation from English, and the way it flows, it feels weird, because you feel like it's English sentences that have been made into isiZulu. Well, and when it comes to Zulu, priorities about the things that you talk about first or things that you emphasize are different from the way you do it in English. So there's a lot of nuances that I'm trying to teach myself in terms of making up words and phrases that explain scientific principles. So what I do with that is, instead of trying to write the word planet in isiZulu, what I do is try to understand what the word planet means. So if you go back in Latin, I think it means, or Latin or Greek, I think it's Latin, it means wanderer. So you can take that wanderer and put it in isiZulu, and then it becomes umhambi, which means wanderer in isiZulu. And trying to do a lot of that with other scientific terms as well. I mean, there's things that you can't say in isiZulu that comes from English. So I try to approach it with every other scientific term. I'm making up words, basically.
I'm just thinking historically how 100, 200 years ago, if you were an educated person, you learned multiple languages for specific purposes. So if you were talking anything technical, science or engineering, you use German because it's such a precise And if you're talking, and if you want to talk law, you'd use Latin. If you wanted to, well, I don't want to go say too much because this is not an area that I'm educated in, but.
Yeah, apparently, if even in Germany, I mean, English has become the international language of science. So even if you're German or you know another language and you can do it, you can understand even Afrikaans. There's a lot of science that's done in Afrikaans. But when you have to write papers and everything, the official way to do it is in English. So yeah, it's English has become the number one language. It's okay. It's just that there's things that it's not very efficient at doing. Like some Zulu words, like one word in English, you have to say it in one or two sentences, even though it's just one word in isiZulu.
Because I don't even notice this. I'm a first language English speaker, so it doesn't occur to me that there could be a better way or.
Yeah.
From what you've seen talking to people, how important do you reckon astronomy is in South Africa? Or the other way around, how important is South Africa in the world of astronomy?
Okay. From two perspectives, the radio astronomy perspective, and there's also the optical astronomy perspective. In terms of optical astronomy, South Africa is up there with the most important countries when it comes to optical astronomy. If you look at the history, the scientist Huygens and his son, I can't remember the exact name, but he's one of the scientists who, living in the Northern Hemisphere, they knew a lot about the northern sky, but no one knew much about the southern sky. So there was a huge gap. So Huygens is one of the people who actually came to South Africa to continue charting the star map here. And luckily, South Africa is has a geographical advantage because if you look at the rest of our latitude, there's just ocean
Yes.
along us. So we're at a geographic advantage. So that's how. I think one of the first observatories in Southern Africa was in a swamp in Cape Town. That's where the Southern African observatory, the old one, or the offices are at the moment. So it was there in a swamp. Another one in the mountains in Joburg. So in terms of completing a star map and a lot of information about the southern sky, the location of South Africa and South African astronomers were quite instrumental in it. So I would say the foundations of astronomy today owe a lot to what was done in South Africa. And when we're lucky enough to have the South African Astronomical Observatory in Sutherland, where we have a couple of international and South African telescopes and projects there. So South Africa is quite important historically and today for having the Southern African Large Telescope, which a lot of international astronomers get time to use. So in terms of optical astronomy, very, very important in terms of that. In terms of radio astronomy, we have the SKA, which is being built at the moment. But historically, if I have my history correctly, it's that our radio astronomy program started in the 60s with the American Space Program, where South Africa had, where NASA built a dish in Hartebeesthoek. Hope I'm not slaughtering that.
That's just down the road from where I live, actually, that one.
Okay,
I still
okay.
haven't been to see it, but one day.
Yeah. It's a huge 26 meter diameter dish that was put there so that NASA would be able to track their space probes and the people they put up there during the space race. And there weren't any many places to put it. Just like I said, we have a geographic advantage, and luckily we had a program at Rhodes University. I hope I'm not getting my history wrong here. At Rhodes University, where you had some professors there who were able to use and convert the dish there as a radio telescope. And from there, Hatshepsut has been one of the most important radio astronomy facilities in the world over the years. It's quite old now, but it's still very much in use. And from that, we have world-leading radio astronomers, including Professor Bernie Baneroff. Shoot, I hope I'm not saying that name wrong.
I think it's right. It sounds right. He's with SKA, isn't he?
Baneroff, yes, Baneroff, not Baneroff. Yes, it's his Professor Benny Baneroff. He's the former director at SKA. He retired a couple of years ago. So that's Bernie Baneroff and a couple of other world-class astronomers that come from South Africa. So we have that, and now we have MEERKAT, the MEERKAT project telescope, and building up to the SKA as well, which will be the largest radio telescope in the world and the largest, most powerful scientific instrument ever created. So I would say we're pretty much important.
Pretty much, yeah, it's
Yeah.
my feelings as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, listen, thank you for your time.
Sure.
This has been great. If I don't know, if someone wants to get a hold of you, how can they get on? Can they find you on Twitter or online or somewhere, or
Yeah, on Twitter I am AstroSibs. On Facebook, it's just Sibusiso Biela. And I have a blog called Ninja Astronomy. If you Google that, you will find it. And I also write for SciBri. So if you go to SciBri, you'll see a lot of my articles there, scibri.co.za. And you could check out Newsweek magazine as well. Every now and then, I have a science column in there.
Newsweek as well. Okay.
Yep.
Great. Well, I'll put all those links in the show notes, and then yeah, how the hell do you end these things? Okay, well, thank you very much. It's been great.
Thank you. Sounds like you have a lot of editing to do, so good luck with that.